IVM.
Welcome to All Things Policy, a daily podcast supported by Pragati, a flagship media initiative of the Takshashila Institution. We're a bunch of policy nerds based in Bengaluru, and we like to bring a fresh perspective to Indian affairs and an Indian perspective to global affairs. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and join us for today's chat.
Hi everyone, welcome to one more episode of All Things Policy. In this episode, we are going to talk about the linkage between agricultural productivity and development, agricultural productivity and structural transformation. Basically, it will revolve around the impact of certain technological interventions, innovations in the field of agriculture. And we are going to primarily focus on the impact of canals on our economy. And the podcast is largely based on a recent paper, The Long-Run Development Impacts of Agricultural Productivity Gains, Evidence from Irrigation Canals in India. We will share the link for the paper along with this podcast. Please do check it out. For this episode, I have with me my colleague Apoorv. Apoorv is a staff program manager. He manages Takshashila's flagship postgraduate program in public policy. Hi Apoorv, welcome to All Things Policy.
Hey, thanks Artha. Thanks for calling me. And since you mentioned about the PGP program, I just wanted to tell your listeners that the application process for the sixth cohort of the postgraduate program in public policy at Takshashila has already started. So if you are interested in taking a deep dive into public policy or policy analysis, then do check out our website and our course structure. The application deadline is 8th January 2022, and the program begins on 15th January 2022. We also have early bird application in which, you know, you can apply and we will give attractive scholarships. And the early bird application deadline is post-December 2021. So please check out our PGP program and we'll be happy to help you during the application process. And thanks, Sarthak, once again, and happy to be back.
Thanks, Apoorv, for the bit of information. So Apoorv, before we get into the paper, can you just tell us about structural transformation? What constitutes structural transformation? What do these authors mention about structural transformation?
Right, Sarthak. So let me begin by defining structural transformation and explaining the process and the phenomena of structural transformation. And it draws heavily from, of course, economics, right? So structural transformation, essentially in layman terms, Sarthak, it means a distribution or reallocation of economic activity across several sectors, right? And when I say several sectors, it is broadly three sectors: agriculture, manufacturing, and services, right? And, you know, being an economic student and, you know, a person who are sort of into economic reasoning, both of us know that, you know, across the globe, you know, if there has been a trajectory, if there has been a classic trajectory of economic development, it begins from agriculture. So when agriculture productivity increase, countries shift to manufacturing. Within manufacturing, they start with low-end manufacturing products, and then they graduate to high-end manufacturing products such as electronics and so on and so forth. And then they move to services, right? So this is a classic sort of a trajectory of any country or of any development model, or a country that has had a structural transformation. In India, this structural transformation, and we have spoken about this in earlier episodes also, in India, this structural transformation has not been this straightforward, right? So we have bypassed the manufacturing sort of a process and we directly entered into services sector. So India began as an agrarian country. We increased agricultural productivity, but what we ended up doing was that we had a robust services sector, which was capital intensive and not labor intensive, right? We completely bypassed we missed actually manufacturing bus and bandwagon, I would say. And that is where we are right now. So that is what is structural transformation. In this paper, the researchers are actually talking about a microcosm of this unique India's trajectory. And their microcosm and their geographical sort of area of inquiry are the canal towns and rural areas around the canals, Sarthak.
Yeah, thanks Apoorv. Thanks for helping us understand the term structural transformation. Now, in this paper, they talk about structural transformation, and in fact, they pose this question, whether structural transformation has happened because of development of canals in case of India. Now, what has been the findings of their research? So they have looked at, again, different data points, and they are looking at some of the implications, right? So what they are saying is, those villages in India which have access to canals, in these villages, agricultural productivity has increased. Now, by the way, in case of India, more than 52% of the population, they stay in the vicinity of a canal, in the sense that the canal might be within a 10-kilometer distance. And 25% of irrigated areas in India is irrigated through canals. So those places which have access to canals, the agricultural productivity has increased. These are the places where you will find more agricultural land. More land has been irrigated. Apart from that, they also find out that the winter crops productivity is high. So in the winter months, the productivity is higher as compared to those places where you do not have access to canals. Also, they find out that those places which have canals, the population density is quite high. I mean, it's difficult to compare populations, the size of population, but what you can do is we can compare population density. You find out that the population density is high. The consumption rates are also quite high, which points out that maybe people are more affluent. Also, there is slight increase in services. But interestingly, they find out that there is not much difference when it comes to manufacturing, right? So in fact, there has been a decrease in manufacturing in some places. Apart from that, they also find out that the consumption of education, it has increased. So all the three levels, primary education, middle, secondary education, there has been an increase. Apart from that, living standards of people in these areas which have access to canals has improved over a period of time.
Right, Sarthak. And as you were sort of enumerating the findings of the paper, I couldn't help but sort of recall some of my experiences when I was doing my field study in Uttar Pradesh 2 or 3 years ago. And because the project was on rural development, and this is what I found. So villages after villages, especially in Eastern UP, not Western UP, because Western UP has a very detailed and very elaborate canal irrigation system. But Eastern UP, it used to have because of Ganga, but for the past several decades, those canals have just dried up and they serve no purpose. So the villages when I'm talking about villages, these are the villages around Kanpur and Fatehpur districts in Uttar Pradesh. So the villages that used to have canal in 60s and 70s, but after which the canals dried up because of administrative, lackadaisical attitude or other such things. The overall economic productivity and the economic the vibrancy of those villages have gone down. And since the economic activity, the agricultural productivity of these villages have gone down, people in these villages have migrated out. So they have started migrating to the cities nearby. Cities like Prayagraj, Kanpur, Lucknow, so on and so forth. When I was reading this paper, it was quite evident because this is I have experienced some of these things. The authors are arguing that the rural areas in India that have been that come under canals canal system, or the land that are irrigated or cultivated through canals, their agriculture productivity has increased. And the people have migrated into these areas since agricultural productivity has increased, right? This kind of resonate what has happened in some areas of Uttar Pradesh.
Yeah, thanks Apoor for pointing out the reasons why maybe we haven't had this kind of a structural transformation, why manufacturing has not grown. And one of the major reasons here is the restrictive labor laws that we have. Other economists have also pointed out how our manufacturing sector is primarily capital intensive. So that means it has not been able to accommodate laborers from other sectors. It has been primarily driven by capital. And so this also brings us to another interesting aspect, right? How urbanization is happening, but industrialization is not happening, right? Manufacturing sector is not growing as expected. It is primarily capital driven. It has not accommodated labor. But at the same time, you are seeing that people's consumption has increased, population density has increased, right? So these are all typical features of urbanization. So this is also an interesting feature, urbanization, but not necessarily industrialization.
That's right, Sarthak. So what has happened is that around the canal regions, rural regions around the canals that the researchers have surveyed, what they found was that in due course of time, the demand for non-agricultural products have increased. Right? Because of agricultural productivity, there would have been some sort of a prosperity. And because of that prosperity, the demand for those non-agricultural products have increased. Right. So in ideal condition, what happened is that since the transport cost between the village and the city is high, so in ideal condition, the villages should have come up as manufacturing units or sites, right? And then a small sort of an industrial ecosystem would have started around the same areas. But in India, that has not happened, surprisingly. What has happened is that people have moved geographically, but they have not moved in different sectors. And I think you've also pointed out early in the talk that people have migrated to urban areas, but they have not migrated or they have not moved to other sectors, or they have not moved to manufacturing sectors because there was a lack of, you know, robust manufacturing ecosystem or industries. Yeah. So that, I think, is very interesting because, again, I would come to, you know, my example that I quoted in Uttar Pradesh, that in the Doab region, which is between River Ganga and Yamuna, there used to be a very, you know, there used to be a intensive, not intensive, but a good amount of canal system because a canal system that would connect regions between Ganga and Yamuna. But because it has sort of, you know, it has not worked over the past several decades, that is why you see lesser prosperity in Eastern UP as compared to Western UP.
Yeah. So thanks for pointing this out, Apoor. Now, another aspect is inequality, right? So we saw that overall productivity has increased, consumption has increased, people have become better. But how has it impacted inequality? But before going to the inequality and other dimensions, we'll have a small break. So welcome back. So we have been talking about the impact of the canal system on productivity and how it has increased production, how it has increased productivity, and it has led to higher consumption. So Apoor, has the consumption been equal for different social categories?
Not at all, Sarthak. So what has happened is that the big landowners who had a significant land size, their consumption rates were higher than landless laborers or people who didn't have land, as per the study, as per the researchers. Their consumption to non-agricultural products, which I have mentioned a short while ago, they have increased, but the same pattern has not been seen in agricultural laborers, right? So clearly what has happened is that because of the access of canal, of a robust irrigation system, you have a category of landed farmers and people who got prosperous. And since they got prosperous, they had extra sort of an income at hand. They were able to buy or consume other products, but the same pattern was not seen in other categories that had no access to land or had less access to land, right? Or their access to land was restricted in some ways. So that is one aspect. The other aspect was also the demand of education. So the demand of education in households belonging to these landed sort of farmers were higher than the demand of education in amongst the landless laborers, because they were able to send their children and other people from other generations to schools and colleges in cities and towns. But same didn't happen for people who didn't have land or who didn't have resources. And it had a sort of a long lasting impact on the incomes of those households, especially the income of the adults of those households.
Yeah, and one more thing, the share of landowners that has also declined. That means landlessness has increased over a period of time.
Right. So specifically what has happened is that the towns or the areas that are above the canal, which means that, so canal system follows a gravity this thing. So, water flows from higher level to lower level. So the cities, the towns and the areas that were at the higher level, where the access of water or the canal system was not that great, there in those cases the landlessness increased as compared to the lower canal region where they profited more because the access to canals, access to water was more in these regions. So it cultivated their land and it made them more prosperous.
Yeah. And apart from that, they also point out that the towns that were nearby, or at least urban areas that were nearby, the places which were having access to the canals, in these areas, again, urbanization increased, the population density increased, so towns grew up. So what they are also saying that maybe the places where you have more canals, maybe here structural transformation has not happened, but towns nearby, cities nearby may have seen the impact, right? They might have had structural transformations.
Right, Sarthak, you are right in that assessment. And as I mentioned a short while ago, that, because of higher income, higher prosperity, and, higher agricultural productivity, people have moved out of those villages and they have moved to these urban areas, which is sort of, so they have migrated to these urban areas. And hence, the urbanization has increased. So the towns that you were mentioning, they have seen a huge influx of people over the past several decades. So a kind of a structural transformation happened in those towns, but the structural transformation was absent in the rural areas near the canal system.
Yeah. So basically, I mean, these are some of the really fascinating findings, right? So productivity shocks, if you are going to analyze, so in the short run, it might be different. In the long run, it might be different. In short run, maybe there will be a sectoral impact, but in the long run, maybe it is special impact. And in this case, we are definitely seeing that there is a special impact. Apart from that, there is another fascinating finding in this paper was how urbanization and industrialization, they are not going hand in hand, right? In many of the West European countries, generally trend will be like this: urbanization and industrialization, they happen together. But here, urbanization is happening, but the industrialization is not happening. So, anything else, Apoorv, you want to point out that you found fascinating in this paper?
Just to conclude, Sarthak, the last point you have mentioned comparing other European countries was very interesting. And I would just like to conclude on that theme because I thought that while I was reading the article and the paper, it's quite a detailed paper with very complex sort of econometrics and other things. While I was reading the paper, I sort of, it appeared to me that this paper is actually a sort of a microcosm to the entire development or economic development trajectory of India over the past 70 plus years. Because it talks about structural transformation or the missed structural transformation, if I may use the word, how servicification of Indian economy happened, rather than from agriculture to manufacturing to services, we moved directly to services. So it talks about that. It also talks about migration, industrialization, urbanization without industrialization. And that actually sort of encapsulates the entire development trajectory of India. So on that front, this is a great paper for all of us, and especially for all policy analysts or people interested in policy to read this paper because it talks a lot about Indian trajectory or Indian development trajectory.
So I think with this note, we can conclude this podcast.
Thanks, Sarthak, for having me. It was great talking to you.
Yeah, thanks, Apoorv. Thanks to our listeners for tuning in. We will meet again in one more episode of All Things Policy.
If you liked our show, don't forget to check out other interesting podcasts on the IVM network. You can tune into them on the IVM Podcast app, ivmpodcast.com, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow IVM on social media. The handle is @IVM Podcasts on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And hey, if you'd like to dive into Takshashila's research on technology, strategy, and economic affairs, check us out at our Twitter handle @TakshashilaInst or our website takshashila.org.in.
Hey, it's been another great week on the IVM Podcast Network. On All Things Policy, Ananya Desai and Rohan Pai discuss recurrent bans on fireworks during festive seasons in India and discuss possible solutions to tackle India's air pollution problem. On the Habit Coach podcast, Ashton Doctor welcomes Sahil Mehta, an esteemed mountaineer and author of the book Break Free. Sahil shares a transformative experience which became the catalyst for embracing discipline and fulfillment. The episode explores the profound impact of vulnerability on personal growth. Folks, if you like our shows, do spread the word. Tell your friends and don't forget to rate and review them wherever you're listening to them. Follow us on social media. We are IVM Podcasts on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram and LinkedIn. You'll also find all our shows on YouTube at youtube.com/IVM Podcasts. And finally, we would like to thank our sponsors this week. Omidyar Network India, Abbott, IDFC First Bank and Save Life Foundation. Thank you for making this possible.